I'm Ann Hirschman, and my updated biography includes the fact that I am now a national coordinator for Vietnam Veterans Against the War as of last weekend, and now have a master's in public health as of July. And I am and have been for 47 years working with veterans as a family nurse practitioner, as an activist. I've been involved in the peace movement forever or longer than that. And my graduate research, my thesis for my master's in public health is what formulated this slideshow. It was entirely self-funded. I have no financial interests other than keeping myself fed and the mortgage paid. But I do have, as I said, a long time commitment to peace and to veterans' causes and people in the military. In contrast to our last speaker, I am not a pacifist. However, I prefer a world with as little violence as we can get. Veterans, gotta love them. Okay, so I'm very much indebted to my respondents. This was a qualitative study, and I chose 10 veterans, and by the third interview, I was having a real hard time going, okay, respondent one, who was that? Respondent two, who was that? And I found myself completely lost. So one of the vets suggested that I use the military alphabet, so I'm going to introduce you to Alpha, who is 44. He was regular Army. He was discharged. He had been a civilian for 12 years, could not get health insurance for his family, and joined the National Guard in late 2007 to get health insurance. He had had one deployment and was going back. He was covered by TRICARE when I interviewed him. He did confide to me that he had had some back issues, back injury issues, during the 12 years that he was a civilian, but he hadn't actually mentioned that to the service. Bravo, 32-year-old guy in the National Guard, met him at church, married, expecting a baby, in it for the benefits, and because he really had an eye for service. His family really is steeped in service to the country in any way possible. His brother Charlie, who he describes as 10 feet tall and bulletproof, or at least believing that he's 10 feet tall and bulletproof, had had two deployments in Iraq. And in between deployments, he joined the growing rank of folks who have fought in Iraq or Afghanistan who have succumbed to motorcycle accidents. There are huge, there's huge data, and anyone who wants that reference can see me afterwards. Delta, 28-year-old divorced male, retired from regular Army. After 5 days in Iraq, he was shot below the shoulder blade and is paralyzed, as he is a C4, paraplegic. Echo, 31-year-old guy, served in the Guard, had two deployments in Iraq, living with TBI, bad TBI, and PTSD, degenerative disease of the spine, knee and hip damage. His wife was covered by TRICARE. He doesn't always go for follow-up because TRICARE docs don't get TBI and PTSD. I think that's going to be important later. Foxtrot, 27-year-old guy, served in the regular Army, now discharged. He was in Iraq, has traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, knee and back pain, receives care from the Veterans Administration and TRICARE. He has health issues. He was unaware that he could use TRICARE until he was out of the coverage period and is now under the VA. He did not want to discuss his family. Golf is a 26-year-old single male, retired Marine, covered by the VA, has post-traumatic stress, back injuries sustained in the service. He had difficulty getting his benefits, and in his case, the benefits were even more importantly about income and housing. He should be, according to my medical judgment, 100% disabled, but when I interviewed him, he was homeless and living in his car. Hotel is a 29-year-old single male and served in the Guard. Lots of knee injuries in the Guard, PTSD, and he is concerned about his exposure to depleted uranium ammunition. He's still fighting the VA for any coverage whatsoever. My two female respondents, India and Juliet. I love the alphabet, it was so handy. India is 34, she's a nurse. Her civilian career is on hold. She has served longer than her original service obligation and has unsuccessfully tried to leave the reserves. Her retention is justified under stop loss. She is still under stop loss as we speak, so the policy hasn't caught up with her yet. She served in Afghanistan one deployment, and she identifies herself as having serious PTSD. Juliet is a 24-year-old female Army Reserve member. She spoke to me the day before she got married. The veterans in this study were just so generous. She was injured in a motor vehicle accident, damaged to both her knees. She has PTSD and some lung problems. She was having a problem getting her own permission to go through TRICARE or to the VA because she thought she was going to get in line ahead of somebody who was more deserving and had more severe injuries. Okay. Most of the people in my study, I had originally started my study to try and deal with veterans, actual veterans, people who I recognized as veterans, as in my experience with Vietnam veterans, who were no longer connected to the service in any way. And as you heard from the captain, they're getting rarer and rarer because more and more people are still connected to the service long after they thought they were going to not be connected to the service. The changes in policy that have occurred as far as coverage for some people, the Guard, the National Guard, which is, of course, the state militias, belong to the states. I heard that mentioned here yesterday by one of the military recruiters. And they get about 180 days of TRICARE coverage. TRICARE, for those of you who remember CHAMPUS, TRICARE used to be CHAMPUS. It has changed somewhat. It has gotten a little bit better than that. But they get 180 days, and a lot of them have a hard time even realizing that they're hurt by that time. And so therefore, they're in that gray area that one of my vets was describing himself as. Currently, regular enlisted personnel will have TRICARE for much longer periods. I've heard the term bandied about TRICARE for life, but I haven't read the policy, so I can't speak to that. Now, if people get out of the military and are in the reserves and they go back to their civilian life, my nurse friend Juliet, when she goes back to her civilian job, she will have civilian health insurance. It will not cover any part of her PTSD. It will not cover any part of any injuries that she got in combat because civilian insurance, read your policies, folks, does not cover acts of war. So, I got this out of Military Times. I like this cartoon. Work hard, and you shall be rewarded, okay? The study involves perceived and experienced problems and barriers to care relating to what I came up with was the barriers to care, as I did the analysis, relate to bureaucratic systems and the availability or lack thereof of healthcare options. The differences, of course, with healthcare and combat zones. The warrior culture was huge in this study. One of the biggest barriers to care for veterans and active duty military people is the feeling that they're 10 feet tall and bulletproof. The feeling that I should suck it up and drive. At least 5 respondents used suck it up and drive. At least 4 used 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and every single one of the 10 used man up, including the 2 women. I did put in the slide about those people who had yes, yes, and yes, okay? I'm seeing surprise back there. There were some positive perceptions of the healthcare systems, and certainly these folks had suggestions. I'm not going to bore you with the entire interviews. I have hours of this stuff, but bureaucratic issues. Friend had a heart problem. I think he used the VA for that, but they don't make it easy. Get up at 5 in the morning. Carpool centers get set up, and there are so many veterans from, you know, my age to 20 million veterans, and then you sit and wait all day. And Juliet said, I waited and waited, and finally we're waiting for this guy, you know, who's doing the stuff, the papers, you know, to upgrade. We're waiting to see if it's worth it. He's like the guinea pig for all of us. I'm still waiting for my eligibility, so I still have my bad knees not treated, and I'll limp down the aisle. The process of getting care. Gal says, when I first got home, I was seen at the VA in Buffalo, and it was fine. And then I moved to DC, and when I was transferred, the VA's records are supposed to just transfer automatically, so they didn't. And now none of my records appear to exist. When I was in Buffalo, no one could find my records. They have any kind of stuff at the VA except a billing department, which continues to send me bills because I've yet to even have a hearing for my service connection rating. He had been out of active duty for over a year when this occurred. It is supposedly getting better. There are new simplified procedures It's less than a ream of paper. It's really important. Staffing issues were key. One of the people that was most key in the interviews was Juliet, who is a nurse. They're so busy, and I guess my stuff is not so bad. So I hate to take an appointment from some troop with, you know, real bad stuff. And PTSD clinic, forget it. Too many of us, not near enough of them. The doctors and stuff, they try really hard, but they're way overwhelmed. In combat. There's a wonderful book out about combat medical care in Iraq. It's terrifying. My students like to look at it and then like to not look at it. Healthcare in a combat zone. Healthcare in a combat zone certainly is important when you have somebody who's just been shot. Most of the people I interviewed did not speak to their immediate care in a combat zone. The one Delta talks about, he got hit just below the collarbone and fell. Everyone's telling me they did a great job because I'm still breathing. That's probably quite literally true. But there are other things that go on in a combat zone that are not immediately near death. And for instance, Charlie got epididymitis and was back on duty in a few hours. One of his troops had an appendectomy and was back in his room in 2 days and on duty in 7. In a combat zone. And that was an open AP. That was not an arthroscopic kind of AP, a scope AP. Warrior culture. This came up time and time again in all my interviews. And it occurs for people who are in the military, it occurs for anyone who's been in combat, that 10 feet tall and bulletproof self-perception of invulnerability that gets people into the habit of doing risky things and produces folks who do risky things even when they come back to civilian life. And again, the studies about motorcycle accidents just fried my brain. The stigma against showing weakness, the suck it up and drive. I didn't make this stuff up, trust me. The concern for fellow soldiers, which some of this is a really good thing. Camaraderie in the middle of a war zone, being able to work as a unit, be caring about each other is not an entirely negative thing, but it does produce a huge barrier to getting care for each individual soldier. I have to emphasize there are positives here. And provider biases. Some troops in some areas of deployment were told they could not report mental illness. One of my respondents who absolutely told me that because he was going to tell me this story, he didn't want to be one of my respondents and didn't make it to the study, told me an awful story about having to set 2 enlisted men to babysit a 3rd enlisted man because the 3rd enlisted man was so mentally ill that he was dangerous to have running around with a gun, but the psychiatric provider at their base was refusing to diagnose psychiatric illnesses at that point. That has nothing to do with systems. The systems are in place. The policies do not support that kind of activity, but it happens. And so we get soldiers who see that in combat. Combat is ugly, right? The warrior culture, Juliet. And this, going to troop clinic, I basically still had to go on the convoy and went like on a 6-hour convoy, even though like with ice packs around my knees, but you have to, like they say, man up. Juliet is female, okay? Bravo. I didn't feel that something traumatic outside the norm got me to have assistance until later. For all of us who were there, we wanted to see a little more action. You know, you're there, and besides, my dirt on my boots, and then he didn't want his wife to hear that, so she left the room. It's what you train for, and you train for it. So you get hurt or sick, and you think, suck it up and drive, man. Man up and do your work. In other words, stay in combat, stay with your troops, don't chicken out, if you will. Stop loss, we've talked about. It's no longer a policy that is supposed to be ongoing, but there is certainly redeployment. And the current policy, as of this year, requires that folks get care for physical and mental issues before redeployment. This is not being honored everywhere. There are some bases where it's being honored. There are other bases where it's not being honored. And that's due to both command issues and, again, that warrior mentality, well, if I report it, then I won't get to go with my unit, and then they'll be without me, and responsibility for one another. I didn't mean this to be a smaller typeface. I have problems with making slides. Foxtrot was absolutely enthusiastic about his local VA. They were doing him very well. Delta was grateful for his care in country. A lot of these people had positive experiences of good medical care in VA medical centers, but criticized the inconvenience, the bureaucratic process, the difficulty getting in the door. And I'm still seeing this among vets that I work with, and vets of all eras. Opportunities for change. Alpha was really clear. It should be automatic. Frequently, guys coming home have to choose among a plethora of choices, of coverage, and are only covered if they fill out the right paperwork and they get the paperwork in. And I think it's a great idea that Alpha had. It should be automatic. It should be easy. You should have to file to get out of the system. Would make things much easier on the guard and reserve people especially. Families should get care for longer and TRICARE should be more available. Computers can track us within 3 feet of our cell phone and can send help to your car with OnStar, but the VA can't keep records straight because they're old-fashioned paper or on laptops that get lost. It's an absolutely, I mean, I can't say it. The VA has a very good digitized record system when the records get entered.
Everything and when gets they entered in a computer. There's yeah. No paper.
And right now, we still have people who are having their records that they can't find.
As a VA, but if everything is digitized, it's, record, there's no paper.
It's beautiful. That may be an update from when I interviewed these guys,
that's
remember.
Well, he's alive, if you know what I mean.
Actually, that wasn't. Actually, that was not Jeff Millard. Just saying. That was one of the other vets, and his experience was at VAs in New Jersey and Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, the whole system is on this, even at our very small outpatient clinics. I just want to set that straight. Because, you know, I mean,
I am glad to hear that.
Would I go to heaven to have an integrated system like that?
There is now better record keeping at the VA. There are still problems at the VA, and certainly huge problems with TRICARE. Are vets getting help? Yes, vets are getting help. Are they getting the help they expected? In some cases, yes. In many cases, I'm happy to say yes. Are there still barriers to care? Absolutely. Are negative perceptions contributing to delayed care or suboptimal outcomes? Of course they are. Vets are failing to seek care or failing to follow up as recommended and dropping out of the system, sometimes due to bureaucratic and geographic barriers, sometimes barriers in TRICARE, and sometimes because things are overly time-consuming and demanding, and sometimes because they just don't feel like they need the care yet. Vets are a unique community. There's a real identity shared by all veterans, especially by combat veterans, and it includes a common language and shared dangers. I urge healthcare providers to ask people if they've served in the service and to follow up on the care that people need. You heard about women in the military having both rape trauma PTSD and combat PTSD. Combat PTSD is a little bit different, but all PTSD should be treated and treated seriously and quickly. We need to improve TRICARE. One of the things I found in this research was that some states are very well provided. There are a lot of TRICARE providers, and they're available in a reasonable geographic area. New Jersey's pretty good. Massachusetts is better. Some other states, there were real geographic barriers. The nearest TRICARE provider might be several hundred miles away. So that needs to be taken care of. Care has to be available to all ranks and classifications. Benefits should be equalized for all combat veterans. I was asked by a uniformed person yesterday, how do we pay for this? We will be paying for the care for these people one way or another. Either the civilian healthcare system or the military and VA healthcare system have to provide care, or these people will fall through the cracks and fail, and that just cannot be. Those of us who believe in universal healthcare would love to see that pick up all the slack and cover all the safety net holes, but for our veterans, I think they deserve better, and I think having to convince civilian doctors to get TBI or PTSD needs is wasting time and money that could better be used by covering people in the military and VA healthcare system. And all healthcare providers need more understanding of vets and active duty military folks. And there's my disclaimer. I self-funded it. Thank you. My one organizing thing, and then I'll take any questions for any of us left on the panel, is that for me, as a peace activist and a veterans activist, the best thing that we could do as a country and as organizers is to organize an end to our participation in wars. If we stop producing combat veterans and take excellent care of those people who are combat veterans and who serve honorably and with distinction in our military, which is the vast majority of people in our military, that to me is the best activity we could get. Honor our military people, give all of the benefits they have earned to all of our veterans, and stop producing veterans as soon as possible. Combat veterans. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Okay, I just want to reiterate for the tape the two points, excellent points that were made. One is that there is indeed an electronic medical record in the VA that is working that sometimes does not, if I got this correctly, does not seamlessly translate from one hospital to another or one location to another in the VA. And I'm sure that's something that's being worked on. And the other, my brain. And the other is that it is important for us to all to tell the veterans to utilize the VA. More utilization means more availability for everyone of those services, and certainly something that I tell the vets that I work with. There was the fire that was alluded to. It was alluded to fires burning down records. There was a big fire in Kansas City, the famous fire in Kansas City, that where lots of records of veterans from much earlier eras, these were veterans from Vietnam and backwards, were destroyed, and it is still affecting people. The family of a Korean War veteran with Alzheimer's disease is still trying to get some benefits for him, and he is still being told that his records were lost in the fire in Kansas City. This is being worked on. There are vets advocates both at the VA and the state level working with that, but the fire in Kansas City. Yes, in the back. Joy.
Not sure if they have it to come.
Okay. The respondent was talking about the difficulties with electronic medical records in general for those of us who are primary care providers and providers, and this is true in the VA system as well. It's for those people who had to get used to it, it's difficult, and it does change the dynamic of interpersonal care for people. And question back here. The nurse that was one of my respondents talked about the differences in working with combat veteran physicians versus non-veteran or non-combat veteran physicians, and certainly there can be some differences. Some of this is individual, some of this is the physicians and the nurses. I mean, my nurse said, talk about doctors and nurses. Meaning about the warrior mentality, they're the worst of the lot. We're the worst because doctors and nurses just get very focused and will ignore their own personal health. How many people here are or know doctors or nurses that are better at taking care of others than themselves? Thank you. Any questions for anyone else on the panel as well? Yes. The question is, the comment and question are, the difficulty in getting appointments at many VA hospitals and many VA facilities where people are called and told, this is your appointment, it's Tuesday, your appointment is Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, whether you have a big meeting, whether you have a final exam, doesn't matter. And this is, with my respondents and also with working with vets since 67, it's real individual, depends on geography in some cases. I mean, we have two VA hospitals in New Jersey. One is far easier on the appointment schedule and far more flexible than the other. They're within 10 miles of each other. So it's a matter of if you're going to Lyons or if you're going to Orange, the difference in getting an appointment. In New York, the Queens VA, the VA system in Queens is one of those, you have to come at such and such a time or don't bother showing up. The VA system out in Nassau County, Suffolk County, Long Island is much gentler and much more flexible. So it behooves people to look at, you know, where, if they're within 10 miles of two, there may be some differences or some chances for differences. The other thing is that established patients who are registered and who have been going to a clinic or going to a facility, by their third appointment, will wind up getting much more in the way of flexibility than that initial assessment appointment. So the first one, two, or three appointments can be the worst of the three, and if people can get past that, it seems like that's a hurdle that gets lower, or a barrier that gets lower in some places. Again, this varies. Sure, please.
One thing that's hard when you enter the VA is that the systems from active duty to the VA is pretty dramatic, and I think that transition time is really hard for lots of reasons, emotionally for vets getting out. I think they've started new deployment clinics. At the VA in Seattle, they have a great model for deployment clinics that tries to make it easier for people who have just gotten out. But I think My experience, at least, when you're active duty, things happen and things are done for you and they come get you and they take you where you need to go. And when you're out, you have to do things on your own. And I think that transition, especially developmentally for people who are younger and then they have to kind of care for themselves in a different way, is really hard. But that's.
Yeah, the comment was there are some very good things going on. South Carolina has apparently got a very good initiative, especially mental health initiatives. I personally treasure state, federal initiatives. People, because the Guard is state people, you know, is belongs to the governors, it's critical, and I think that every state should be doing this work, and I'm happy to hear that North Carolina is pioneering the kinds of work where veterans get better services, more seamlessly integrated back into their lives. There's good work being done in the military. There's great work being done at many VA hospitals. I did not want this to look like it's all terrible. Certainly, I have some disgruntled people on my panel, but I purposely sought out people who also had some good experiences. I wanted to look at barriers of care. They're internal with the veterans as well as external, and the outreach programs for mental health, obviously the one being talked about in North Carolina, has recognized some of that. And I think I treasure the idea that there's a captain in uniform on a panel in the Peace Caucus at American Public Health Association. I think that it's important for us to work together on efforts for peace and on efforts for care for all of our veterans and active duty people.
And one of the issues you're also having, especially with the Guard and Reserve, is there's a real disparity by state.
You want to come up here and do that on the microphone so everyone?
That's one of the little known things, and I would have tried to include that if I had time allowed. For example, the state of Mississippi right now has less than 3 million people. It's a little bit larger than Brooklyn. However, the authorized Army National Guard in strength for the state of Mississippi is actually numerically larger than the authorized Army Guard in strength for the state of New York, with about 19 million people. Alabama authorized about 11,000 Army Guard, less than 5 million people. California, 37 million, 16,000 Army Guard. So you have a tremendous deployment density in some of these states who we all know are well lagging behind the curve in civilian behavioral or mental health capacity to maybe help some of these returning folks in the Guard. So with these kind of state and federal partnerships, that was something I would hope going forward, that we really have something to take care of those folks in these states that have really borne such a burden in the repetitive deployments.
My own home state, current home state of New Jersey, is a veterans preference state. So we have vets offices in every county, vets offices for the state that help folks connect with benefits both on the state and federal, on state and national level. And just knowing that there are places you can go, the va.gov, there's all the forms. You've got all of the stuff. You can contact me. My contact stuff is in the book. It's annsmedic, annsmedic, at aol.com. And thank you very much for the Peace Caucus for being here.